It's Light the Tower.
Say goodnight to this one.
Your daily look around the world of sports with Horns 24/7 insider Jeff Howe on your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Light it up on a Tuesday. Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. I am Jeff Howe. However you're listening, wherever you're listening, we just thank you so much for being a part of another edition of the high school sports show of record here on the Horn, part of our live local programming all day here on the station. We took the baton from Bucky and Aaron, and I'd like to thank those guys for expertly analyzing that Deshaun Watson audio in the last hour of their program. Thank you for that. Snoop and I will now deal with the ramifications and the fallout from that, and then we'll pass it to Chad and Trey for Shirts and Skins at noon, and then 3 to 7 is going to be the triple option. So with that in mind, let's get along with the presentation. Specs text line is open, 337-3776. Longhorn Notebook coming up at the bottom of the hour. Longhorn Notebook next hour, inconceivable before we're done with hour number one. And we've got two resets of our Horn Top 20, in case you missed it this morning on Bucky and Aaron. The Indiana Hoosiers, number 19 in the Horn Top 20 countdown. Louisiana was yesterday, Indiana today. So we're going Power 5, going to the Big Ten. An Indiana team that Bucky Godbolt, on his last day before vacation, thinks is the second best team in the big TEN conference. So we'll talk a little bit about the Hoosiers on today's show. We're hoping to connect, planning to connect at the top of hour number two with Chris Hummer, 24/7 Sports national college football writer. Chris was part of kind of cover that spectacle, is the best way I can put it, for PG-13 ears on these airwaves at the Capitol yesterday. You know, we've got all kinds of things going on in the state right now. We've got, you know, our power grid is shaky. I mean, we had people dying because of power grid failures in the winter. We got an uptick in COVID cases. We've got one political party in this state's legislature that fled the state. We've got people experiencing homelessness. We've got all kinds of issues. Yet, we got 6 hours of grandstanding yesterday on college football that, at the end of the day, isn't going to really do much of anything at all. So, that's your tax dollars at work yesterday, folks. So, we'll have Chris Hummer on. Chris covered it yesterday. Chip Brown at Horns 24/7, my colleague, covered it for us. So, we'll get into that with Chris, hopefully, at the top of hour number two. He's got a he's filming a round table right now for 24/7 Sports. So Chris is busy, but he'll give us a few minutes of his time. Speaking of giving your time, our esteemed producer is always willing to give his time to cover the prep scene in the greater Austin area.
Yeah.
And he did that yesterday afternoon. We'll go behind the glass now, bring in our esteemed producer, the publisher, curator, otherwise major domo of everything Flex ATX. FlexATX.com, at FLXATX on Twitter and Instagram. He is Snoop Daniel. Snoop.
What'd it do?
We talked about it yesterday. Trip to Hayes, but you just kind of showed up and were there and things got shut down. Weren't even able to make it to Bowie because there was no point in doing so. But you did happen to make it out yesterday to LBJ.
State aspirations, LBJ.
To see the Jaguars.
Yeah. They actually just had a new, I guess the photos put up in the hallways of Latrell and Macuba, so they're immortalized. As people walk in, it's the first thing they see is their pictures. So current Clemson, current Oklahoma, D1 first year kids.
So how Coach are Fenner. Things? How are things looking over for Coach Fenner and the Jaguars?
Great.
Right now?
I'm telling you, like they've added. Like I think if it was another school, I think people would might get upset because they just had a whole bunch of kids, you know, from other schools transfer in for a car. I don't want to like be throwing kids' names out there on the airwaves about because I don't want to get them in trouble. You know, snitches get stitches. But they do have some new people that I'll talk about once this season is they're actually playing ball. But they have, to me, I feel it's a super team. I really do. It's a 4A team. If they don't win state, I will be disappointed.
What do they lose? I know, obviously, losing Andrew McCubbin, losing Latrell McCutcheon. That's a big deal. But what are they bringing back as far as
well, Cedric Alexander starters? I think he's going to be the breakout running back of the area this year. He's entering his junior year. He had split a lot of carries last year in limited time. But I want to say he averaged dang near 10 yards a pop, a carry. So I think he gets more. And they added, okay, I'll just talk about Kyron Miller. This is stuff that probably ain't even Dave Campbell's magazine. This is how deep this is.
Do your thing, Snoop.
Kyron Miller, he just transferred in from Hutto. His family moved, so he's playing there. There's also a kid formerly from Del Valle named Caleb Brown, a linebacker who is, I believe, a verbal commit to Houston. Now he's going to play linebacker for his senior year at LBJ. So, and then I'm leaving out the biggest piece, Nunu, their left-handed quarterback Oscar Gordon, who just verbally committed to Texas Southern. He had a breakout year last year in his first year starting, former Pflugerville Weiss product. So, Nunu got a chance to finish what he started last year and at least play in Jerry's world. Maybe not win it, but let's get to Dallas or Arlington.
Yeah, DCTF, I'm looking at my copy of Dave Campbell's Texas Football, which if he didn't win one during our lengthy giveaway of the magazine this year, you got to pay for it. It is no longer $3.99. You got to go out and buy it. But I have started seeing it more and more on newsstands. Saw some at Barnes & Noble when I was there yesterday. I saw some at HEB when I was getting some at the HEB Plus in Kyle, which even though I moved to the 666, the HEB Plus in
Kyle
is still my HEB. Well, I pass it on the way home, so it's it's an easy stop. I was getting air filters for my air conditioner, and the magazine aisle is right there.
Oh, you have air conditioning?
Of Dave Campbell's Texas Football. In my house?
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Why do you act like that's a luxury?
Dude, because not everybody got air conditioning, man. It's hard out here for a pimp. Not me exactly, but some people don't got AC.
Well, it's just make sure, hey, on that note, since we are in the hottest part of the year, if you know somebody, especially the elderly, make sure you're looking out for your people if they don't have air conditioning. But yes, I do have air conditioning, Snoop. So it's not like I live in Gerald or something where that stuff is primitive. But no, Dave Campbell's Texas Football did pick LBJ to win District 13-4-AD1. Oscar Gordon III is their preseason offensive MVP. Their preseason defensive MVP, Case Brister, linebacker out of Lampasas.
So he's a beast.
There's your preview for Class 4A, District 13-4A D1. Snoop,
so fun.
Would you agree with that prediction?
Yes, wholeheartedly. I really feel like LBJ, they have got to win it this year. They've had talented teams in the past. I was walking through the hallways, and they had a picture of their 2014 team that lost to Vandergrift in the state quarterfinals. It was 40-35, and that was an outstanding team. They had Allie Green, who now plays for Missouri. He was a former Tulsa player and standout there, and now he's playing in the Big 12.
So, again, citing the folks at Dave Campbell's Texas Football, Greg Tepper's a part of this show. Matt Stepp's been a friend of mine for a long time.
We had Stepp on the show?
Those guys. Yeah, we have had Stepp on the show. We've got to deal with Tepper, so it's kind of hard to do. I do know Matt Stepp is planning on covering a few games in the greater Austin area this year, though. I always tell them, I'm like, look, we need to get you. And I don't think they play anymore. You can correct me on this, Snoop. I don't believe they play anymore. But I always told them, I'm like, you need to find you, like, if you can get, like, LBJ McCallum on a Thursday at House Park. It's a really good.
Yeah, they're 5A, 4A now.
Yeah, so they don't even play each other anymore?
Nope.
Okay.
Isn't that crazy?
That was a good game, a good rivalry.
LBJ, they actually open up the year on a Thursday night, August 26th, they're hosting Manor.
Okay.
That's a hood battle, fam.
So how can LBJ, how come, so Manor's willing to play LBJ, but McCallum's not? Is that what we're talking about here?
I think, Manor and LBJ are so, like, they're basically cousins.
Okay.
So.
I just liked that LBJ McCallum game.
Yeah.
That was one of my when I was covering preps, that was one of my favorite
Blame it on Lhasa. You know, they wanted to make the Liberal Arts Science Academy school so bad, and they broke up the band, Yoko.
Ah, yeah. That happens sometimes. But no, looking at Dave Campbell's Texas football, their Class 4A preview, Division 1, Region 4. They've got Cal Allen over LBJ in a regional final. That's their official prediction, with Argyle beating Cal Allen in a state championship game. So, but good year for the Jaguars nonetheless. Now, you did not, we talked about Crockett yesterday. You were not able to make it out to Crockett.
Dude, did you see how hard it was? It was crazy rain yesterday at times.
Yeah, I caught some of those storms down in my neck of the woods.
And late, like, you know, like at 5 p.m., 6 p.m., like just torrential downpour in the middle of rush hour traffic. So I will get to Crockett eventually. My plan is to go to Hendrickson this afternoon and Maynard tomorrow morning.
Nice. So go see the Hawks, send Coach Killian my best over at Hendrickson, and then you're going to go
Mustangs.
Go see Maynard.
Coach Keller.
Nice. Nice. All right. So there it is. Look, I know, you know, we do talk high school football on the show because, again, we are the high school sports show of record here on the Horn. So anytime we can talk about local high schools, it's always a good thing. Specs text line is open 337-3776. The Longhorn Blitz podcast has dropped. That dropped this morning. That was myself and Matt Butler. Rod Babers, obviously, I put in the podcast description, Rod's on special assignment. As everybody knows, Rod got married, so Rod was unavailable to do the show this week. But we'll be back and recording another episode, three of us together again. But Matt and I figured this was the first podcast he and I have done together probably since the inception of the Blitz, which was initially it was just myself and Matt doing the show, and Rod was kind of the guest who never left, and then it just ended up being the three of us. So Matt and I got to throw it back a little bit yesterday as we recorded it. But we talked about a little bit yesterday on the show, kind of about what some of the things we went over on the Blitz as we sit now 32 days away from kickoff, from Texas welcoming Louisiana to DKR for the season opener on September 4th. And one of the things that I was really hung up on were some camp battles, position battles, some of the best position battles to watch on this roster. And we'll finish up that talk today. We talked yesterday about inside linebacker being one of those position battles. Not necessarily a position battle, but kind of how are Pete Kwiatkowski and Bo Davis going to maximize the defensive line talent, the interior defensive line talent that this team has. And then a position that, again, I've talked about ad nauseum all offseason, that wide receiver position. We talked about the position battle within that group, which is really how many guys, and it's going to be a smaller number of guys than you probably saw under Tom Herman, how many guys are going to be in that top group with Joshua Moore and Jordan Whittington once the dust settles and Texas gets ready to play a football game in 32 days. But there are other position battles to watch in camp, and we'll get a couple of those here to wrap up this first segment of the show. You know, the offensive line is interesting because there are some things that could potentially be up for grabs. And I mentioned this recently. One of the highlights of our offseason workouts wrap up, our summer workouts wrap up at Horns 24/7, which we talked about in the Insider last week, was kind of this emergence of Tope Amade. You know, he's a sixth-year guy. He's in that super senior category. I believe he's working on his second master's degree at Texas. So good for Tope on that front. But he evidently has enjoyed a really, really good summer. And there's always those one or two guys that go through their whole career kind of lost in the shuffle, and because we've seen coaching changes at Texas a lot in the last decade or staff overhauls, we've seen this a lot. There are guys that kind of get lost in the shuffle for a few years, and then kind of out of nowhere as seniors, they just pop up and have a monster year. The one that recently comes to mind is John Harris. John Harris was buried on the depth chart at wide receiver, had flashed a little bit here and there. He had also dealt with some injuries. And then Charlie Strong's first year, he was one of the true bright spots in an otherwise pretty much forgettable 6-7 season. He goes for 1,000 yards. It's a 1,000-yard receiver. And there was a point in time where you could have bet me all the money in the world I would have gone against John Harris becoming a 1,000-yard wide receiver, but he ended up doing it. Those are the kind of guys. And maybe, while he's not a skill position guy, and those are the guys that are easier to identify, or even guys that play on defense, because statistically you can quantify what they bring to the table. Maybe Tope Amade is one of those guys, and maybe Tope Amade can strengthen this Texas offensive line, an offensive line that I always say this about that group. That group coming out of spring ball has the most upside of any position group on your roster to get better by the time you get to camp. Then they've got the most upside from the time you start camp to the time you get ready to play your first game. And then they've got the most upside from where they are in game one to where they're going to be by the end of the season. Now, the key to that unit up front is going to be Jake Majors and him continuing to make this impressive ascent that he made late in the year last year. And look, again, I don't want to just beat the 2020 season over the head. That's a dead horse that doesn't need to be bludgeoned anymore. But really, the scenario played out like I wanted it to, but like I didn't want to in some respects. And I remember saying, because if you think about the week going into that Kansas State game, Sam Cosmi had opted out after the Iowa State game and decided to go ahead and get ready for the NFL draft. Derek Kerstetter was hurt in the Iowa State game, and I don't even think if he practiced, it wasn't that much leading up to the Kansas State game. So by the time they got to practice on Monday of that week, they had no choice but to just go to Jake Majors and roll with him at center. And I remember saying at the time, look, it's going to be a really good thing for the future of this program if Jake Majors is good, but if he gets inserted into the lineup and is really good, then it should aggravate a lot of Texas fans, because you'd think, where would that offensive line have been if they had just rolled with Jake Majors from the start of the season as their starting center? And lo and behold, they go to Jake Majors, and Bijan Robinson has two monster games. It's two extremely productive outings on offense against Kansas State and against Colorado, with Jake Majors, who actually fit that wide zone running scheme Tom Herman wanted to rely on. Jake Majors fit that much better than Derek Kerstetter did. No disrespect to Derek Kerstetter, Jake Majors was just a better fit. Now he's going to be the key to this. And again, we talk about the offensive line. Bucky and I had a great conversation about this last week. I felt like trying to find a diverse running game. If you can have more gap schemes, your pin and pull stuff, create angles, create leverage, and really help out an offensive line that probably isn't going to be in a position, especially early in the year, to just manhandle people, just maul guys, just roll guys off the ball at the line of scrimmage. Have a diverse running game. You know, use things that can allow them to be successful, where they can create, I don't want to say smoke and mirrors, but you're helping them out. You're not just asking them to just, again, maul people at the line of scrimmage to get a push up front. You can help them out with creating angles and creating leverage by having a diverse run game. But regardless of what you do, it's all going to start with Jake Majors. And working out from that center position, I do think there's some stuff to be decided. You know, do you feel like Junior Anguilau is going to be one of your starting guards? You feel like Christian Jones, whether it's right tackle or left tackle, is going to be one of your starters at a tackle position? Whichever tackle position he doesn't fit, that other battle is probably going to be a battle, honestly, between Derek Kerstetter and Andre Carrick. And then for your guard spot, I'd like to see if Tope Amade can push Denzel Okafor for a starting spot. And even then, getting off the Tope Amade thing and looking for one of these, you know, super seniors or one of these veteran guys that hasn't done anything in a while to really get their career kickstarted under Steve Sarkisian, I really want to see if Kyle Flood can get something right off the bat, or how early can it happen. Can he get something out of Tyler Johnson and Isaiah Hookfin, two blue-chip offensive linemen? And I'm not going to go ahead and repeat myself through the whole deal, but you guys that have heard me on this show, read my work at Horns 24/7, you know the numbers with Texas and the program's inability over really almost the last 20 years to take blue-chip recruits as offensive linemen and turn them into NFL draft picks. Well, if that's going to change, if that narrative is going to change under Kyle Flood, then those are two really good examples to see, okay, can this staff take those two guys that were heavily recruited and had something about him as recruits? Tyler Johnson was a top 50, top 70 type guy in the country. Isaiah Hookfin was a top 250 type guy in the country. Can you take those guys and turn them into starting caliber players that can go help you win football games? So there are bodies on the offensive line. I don't think they're going to be hurting to find five quality starters. It's just, what is the number Kyle Flood's going to get? This is the thing that's going to get decided in camp. What is the number that Kyle Flood goes into the first game with in terms of guys that he feels are starting caliber players? And then what are your contingency plans? You know, if something happens to Jake Majors, who is your backup center? Is it Derek Kerstetter? Is it Junior Anguilau? So it's not about finding the best starting mix even. It's not about finding five guys that are competent to just hopefully not get your quarterback killed, because there have been seasons at Texas where that has been like, can you just find five guys that can maybe just hold their own for the majority of the game, and you're not even thinking this that can be an overwhelming offensive line. I think Texas is a step beyond that. So that's really what your air quotes position battle is for the offensive line in camp. It's coming up with contingency plans, and what is your number of starting caliber players if you're Kyle Flood? Is it six? Is it seven? I think in a best case scenario, it's eight. The dream scenario is to be truly too deep along the offensive line. I don't think Texas will get there, but we'll see what happens. And Tope Amade could end up being a really big part of that based on the feedback we've gotten from how he looked throughout the summer. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We've got a Longhorn Notebook coming up next. We'll continue to look at camp position battles. We have gotten some recruiting questions on the Specs text line. We'll get to those with a big decision looking like it's just around the way. So we'll get to that. And we'll take a peek into our Horn Top.
Texas Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending as an SML mortgage banker. NMLS number 3304. Not all loans apply. Equalizing lender.
It's the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff. College football starts in 25 days. A reminder from your friends at Bud Light. Light the Tower with Craig Way, Jeff Howe, and Snoop Daniel.
Rolling along on a Tuesday on Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Jeff Howe, Snoop Daniel. We've lost our way again. We're continuing to try to find it through these 2 weeks with Craig on vacation, but I think we're doing an okay job. Again, 24/7 Sports national college football reporter Chris Hummer joining us at the top of hour number two. We've got the Longhorn Notebook coming up here in a second. We've also got to hit our Horn Top 20 Countdown, Inconceivable, coming up at the end of hour number one. So a lot to get to on today's show. Snoop, thank you for that return cut, by the way. You know, that was one.
I need a ride or die, chick.
Yeah, it was some, you know, in when I was moving and making like six trips between Buda and San Marcos daily, I was just kind of going through the playlist and thinking, man, what would be good return cuts for the show? And that was honestly one of them that I was going to send you, but we obviously would need a clean version or an instrumental. Can't go with the album version.
I find it's just safer to go with, because I swear to God, there are YouTube videos labeled clean
that are not.
And it's just like just the absolute album version. So I don't know. I've gotten, you know, but luckily we have a dump, but I just don't want to risk it. That would be terrible. Like Craig comes back and we've lost the license. What happened?
Yeah.
Return cuts.
We've gotten a couple questions on the Specs text line 337-3776 about Bryce Anderson, the four-star safety to Beaumont Westbrook. He has taken to Twitter and announced he's ready to make his decision. As of right now, I haven't heard when he's going to make the call. I know Mike Roach and Nick Harris still have their crystal ball predictions set for Texas. I'll do some more digging on that. That just happened. That tweet came down from Bryce Anderson right as Snoop and I were packing up to come in the studio for the change from Bucky and Aaron. So I just advise you stay locked into Horns 24/7. Nick Harris has been pretty dialed in on that recruitment. So we'll have any kind of updates on the Bryce Anderson situation coming off of his latest visit to Texas. He was at Texas on Friday with Jalen Gilbo, his good friend, the Port Arthur Memorial cornerback, who was formerly committed to Texas, decommitted, opened things up. But Bryce Anderson did make a recent visit to Texas and announced this morning via Twitter that he's ready to make his decision. But as of right now, I haven't gotten any indication one way or the other exactly when that decision is going to be made. And that's a really big piece for Texas. In a, you know what, Snoop, let's go ahead and just get to the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cpdoors.com.
You know, it's one of these deals where there's a lot of hand-wringing right now over the 2022 class, over guys that have gone elsewhere. And, you know, Mike Roach and I talked about this on Friday. Guys that have either decommitted or they've gone elsewhere or they flipped at the last minute. You look at Texas right now in this recruiting class for Steve Sarkisian. You know, it's ranked number 11 in the country at 24/7 Sports. 15 verbal commitments One top 100 prospect, that being Brian Allen Jr., the safety out of Aledo. But, you know, Malik Murphy is a four-star prospect, a top 10 prospect in his position at the quarterback position. Jaden Blue, a top 10 prospect and had his position at the running back position in the country. Armani Winfield is number 156 in the 24/7 Sports composite rankings. Jamarian Miller, the running back out of Tyler Legacy, he's the number 15 ranked running back prospect in the country. So this recruiting class has talent. And it's almost just like if you're at Texas, you're the flagship school in a state that produces as much NFL talent as this state does, as much top-tier college talent as this state does. By default, even in a bad year, Texas is going to have a top 20 to 25 recruiting class. Even in the, I think that Tom Herman class in 2017, that transition class, I think that was ranked 25th in the country, and that's been the lowest at 24/7 Sports. Even doing the composite retroactively, that's the worst class that we've seen that Texas has put together in the .com era of recruiting. So Texas is always going to get talent, but are you getting the kind of difference makers? That's what anybody that's heard me for a long time knows that's where I stand on signing day. Are you getting the kind of difference makers who can help you go win a championship? And Texas has missed on some of those guys. They missed on, they had a chance to get Terrence Brooks, the defensive back out of Red Oak. He ends up committing to Ohio State. They had Evan Stewart in the class. He decommitted and has opened things up. Bryce Anderson's decision, that's going to be one of those guys that falls into that difference maker category. Whenever Denver Harris, the Galena Park North Shore cornerback, when he gets ready to make his decision, that's one of those difference making recruitments that Texas needs to win. Kelvin Banks, the offensive tackle out of Summer Creek and Humble, that was a decision that did not go Texas' way. And we know when Mike was in on Friday, Mike Roach, the recruiting editor at Horns 24/7, we talked a lot about just how hard it's getting to find true offensive tackle bodies, not just in Texas, but across the country. You almost have to either land a ready-made guy that is a no-doubt walk guy who can walk in and compete for a starting spot, or you probably got to find you a Sam Cosby, a guy that is purely a developmental guy that you say, okay, a couple years down the road is when he's going to be ready. But when he's ready, we think we've got something there. And that's all going to depend on your player development program, strength training, strength conditioning, nutrition, the whole deal. But I digress from that. But, what is wrong with Texas recruiting right now? Is it that Texas was unprepared for name, image, and likeness? Is it that this staff is just getting flat beat on recruits, or they're misreading recruitments? Is it just that it's a weird cycle and you've got kids changing their minds at the last minute? Man, I think it's all of that. I've been doing this way too long now to know better than just to blame it, just throw a blanket over it and just blame it on one thing. And that can make it difficult for some people, because it's the easiest thing to do in society is just find one reason why things have gone awry, why things aren't working out, and just say, okay, that's the reason why. But in this recruiting cycle, man, it's not that simple. And I tell you what, I look forward to it every year. This is the year I look forward to it more than anyone. Mike Roach at the end of the recruiting cycle does his behind the scenes piece. It's always a fascinating read. The coming out after second signing day in February, which used to be the only signing day, but now we do have the early signing period. But in February, Mike will release that article, and I think a lot will come out that people will see just how topsy-turvy this cycle has been, where you've had prospects really in a week go from, yeah, they're getting a commitment video and edits made and giving quotes to writers to commit to one school, only in a matter of days just completely flip and end up picking somewhere else. So it is a weird cycle. I do think this staff though is at a disadvantage that, Tom Herman's staff initially didn't have this disadvantage, and Charlie Strong's staff didn't have this disadvantage. Those staffs at least got to get FaceTime with recruits before you got to the summer months when guys started taking visits. They got to have junior days. Or even then, both of those coaches got to go out on the road in the winter before that would have been the 20. So for Charlie Strong, that would have been before the end of the 2014 cycle. And for Tom Herman, before the end of the 2017 cycle. They got to go out on the road and at least talk to high school coaches and at least be visible to recruits. Sark's staff didn't even get that opportunity because of the extended dead period. So I just don't think it's the right take or I think it's very short-sighted just to say this staff is simply being out-recruited. There are some situations where maybe the staff has read some recruitments wrong. I'm not saying that's not part of the problem, but it's not just one reason why recruiting hasn't been up to snuff for a lot of people. But again, this goes back to something I talk about all the time, and Craig mentions this too, because we've seen it. You know, at the new coach, there's that time period early in their tenure, and we've seen this at Texas, where you've got to pay, unfortunately, to no fault of your own, pay for the sins of the past. And I think for Texas, I think you're so far removed from when this program was winning at an elite level, and so far removed from an era where this program produced truly transcendent players, that these recruits really don't know Texas as a winner. And they really do, maybe more than any other first-year cycle that we've seen, whether it's Charlie Strong's or Tom Herman's or now Steve Sarkisian's, they really do want to see it on the field. They want to see Texas win before they buy into, hey, things are going to be different. Because rather than seeing Texas win, all they've heard throughout their formative years is, when's Texas going to be good again? When's Texas going to be good again? When's Texas going to be good again? And you can only hear that for so long before you just have to see it to believe it. So, and I do think there are other schools that appear to be further along in terms of doing things with name, image, and likeness than Texas has done. So it's a combination of a lot of different things. It's not one reason why recruiting isn't at a level where I think anybody would like it to be right now. So that can change. But again, you're back to that point where it feels like, as a Texas fan, you've been for the last decade, man, just win and you'll get recruits. That's never been more true than this fall. And it's imperative for Steve Sarkisian and the staff to go out and win some games and prove to some of these in-state recruits that, yeah, things are going to be different at Texas this time under this regime, with their ability to go win ball games. Before we move on to our Horn Top 20, I do want to get back into talking about position battles in camp, because that's, again, one thing that I think is worthwhile to talk about before the Longhorns get started at the end of the week. Reporting day is going to be on Thursday. That's when players get back, and Sark kind of gave them some time off. He talked to Craig and I about that down at the THSCA coaching school and convention. They were going to give the team some time off before reporting day, which is going to be on Thursday, and then the first fall practice will be on Friday. So we talked about the offensive line in the first segment, and again yesterday. You can go to the podcast page at hornfm.com to find us talking about some of those position group battles that we talked about yesterday, whether it be inside linebacker, looking at shuffling along the defensive line, wide receiver, and we touched on quarterback yesterday. And one position battle, you know, I said yesterday that inside linebacker spot next to DeMarvian Overshown, I think that's the most wide open position battle in camp, because, again, I can name you four or five guys, maybe upwards of six guys, that could realistically have a chance to start, and you can make a case for any of those guys to be a starting inside linebacker for Texas in 2021. I think that is the most wide open, but man, I think maybe the most competitive camp battle. It's not a quarterback. The quarterbacks, it's its own deal. You just have to completely separate that from the discussion when you're talking about camp battles, because quarterback is its own unique organism. But I think, and again, this next battle I'm going to mention is going to be the most competitive in camp because of the issues I've talked about at wide receiver, and I don't know exactly how Pete Kwiatkowski and Bo Davis are going to maximize that talent on the interior defensive line. I think the most competitive camp battle is going to be that battle in the nickel position between Chris Adamora and Anthony Cook. And what's interesting about that battle, and this goes back to the inside linebacker spot next to DeMarvian Overshown that we talked about yesterday, if you lined up your best 11 on defense, there's a decent chance that Pete Kwiatkowski would put Anthony Cook and Chris Adamora both in that group. Maybe not in your top 11, but let's say your top, I don't know, pick a number, your top 13, top 14. Anthony Cook and Chris Adamora are probably both in that group. In terms of if you're looking at guys and you're too deep, Anthony Cook, assuming he's your number two nickel right now, he would probably be one of your top backups next to whoever's not starting on that defensive line. But that battle, I'm expecting it to be competitive, and it needs to be competitive because that position can give Texas a ton of flexibility. Again, the personnel defensively for this team, it could change week to week based on matchups. Like when you look at the schedule You know you're going to come out and you're going to face a Louisiana team with a running quarterback that they want to play a certain style of football. Maybe it does behoove you to put a true middle linebacker on the field for that week. But then you're going to end up playing Arkansas, and we know what Kendall Briles' offense is all about. Yeah, you probably don't want too many guys that are true, like 235, 240-pound run pluggers playing up the middle. You want length. You want athleticism. You want guys who can make plays in space on the field for that Arkansas game. And maybe that's a game where you feel good enough about starting Anthony Cook at that nickel position to be able to take a guy like Chris Adamora and say, hey, for this week, because we need you against this space and pace offense, this Arkansas version of that Briles, Veer, and Shoot offense, we need you to be our starting middle linebacker this week. And Chris Adamora can function as that role. Keep in mind the spur position he played last year in Chris Ash's defense, that hybrid position, that functioned a lot like a linebacker would, to the extent that the Spurs worked with the inside linebackers when they would do individual drills or offseason conditioning drills or whatever it was. They considered the spur position part of that linebacker group. And then the following week, maybe you do need a Devin Richardson, a Dele Adeoye, somebody like that, because you're going to face a Rice offense with Mike Bloomgren coming from that David Shaw line of thinking at Stanford, that David Shaw school, where heck, you'll line up with two running backs and three tight ends in one formation. And it's not like three tight ends like Iowa State's going to run out where those guys can spread out and play receiver. No, you're going to face three tight ends that they want to smash it together and play you in a phone booth. So that, keep an eye on that nickel position, that battle between Chris Adamora and Anthony Cook, because if those two guys are two of your best 11, 12, 13 guys on defense, and Anthony Cook is that much better in some cases, having Anthony Cook on the field benefits you that much more than it does to have another inside linebacker on the field, you could see situations where both of those nickel guys are playing together. You could also see, and this kind of goes into another really good position battle at safety, man, Brendan Schooler could spin down and maybe play some big nickel, or maybe could function as an inside linebacker. B.J. Foster, we've seen him play at linebacker depth in some sub-packages in his career. Maybe he could be that kind of guy. So again, I've said it before, I'll say it again, it is going to be fascinating to see how week-to-week Pete Kwiatkowski tweaks this personnel to fit the opponent's offensive scheme, how to best match up on a week-to-week basis. All right, Snoop, let's go ahead and get to the top 20.
When you put that uniform on, you better come to work.
It's the Horn Top 20, brought to you by Allstat Beer. No impurities, no regrets. Number 19, the Indiana Hoosiers.
Indiana under Tom Allen went 6-2 last year. Snoop, I know you don't watch a ton of college football, but did you happen to catch Indiana's game against Ohio State last year?
No.
Where they jumped out early and got a bunch of turnovers.
I remember.
The Buckeyes were on upset alert, and Ohio State ended up winning that game 42-35. They ended up coming back.
I remember that
was a really good ball game where the first couple turnovers, like, okay, good for Indiana. They're hanging in there. And then there was a point where you're like, hey, IU might have a chance to go beat Ohio State in the horseshoe. It didn't happen, but Indiana goes 6-2 last year. They get to the Outback Bowl and lose to Ole Miss. Those were their two losses to Ohio State and to Ole Miss. But Tom Allen bringing back 8 returning starters on offense, 9 returning starters on defense. Michael Penix at quarterback. He is the guy, the straw that stirs the drink, if you will, for the Hoosiers. And this defense, again, bringing back 9 starters. This is a team that Bucky Gottbold, I heard Bucky say it in the first hour, he thinks this could be the second best team in the Big Ten. Now, when I was thinking about putting together the Horn Top 20, my contribution, I was kind of down between Indiana or Iowa for that final spot. And honestly, you know, hey, if you've got a veteran quarterback who's proven a little bit, I'll go with that guy. I really liked when I did pop in on Indiana football last year. I liked what I saw from Michael Penix. So I went with Indiana over Iowa in terms of, you know, my stumping for teams in the top 20. As far as where they stand in the Big Ten pecking order, you know, being in that East Division, I do feel like Ohio State, it's kind of similar to Oklahoma in the Big 12. Ohio State's going to run that division, that conference, until somebody steps up and beats them. And you look at that division, man, I'm a bigger fan of James Franklin at Penn State, Snoop, I think, than a lot of other people at this station. And they had a weird year, and James Franklin was dealing with some family issues through COVID. He had a daughter who was sick, so he was separated from his family, and just a really weird year. And they kind of got it together toward the end. And I do think, speaking of, we talk about the 2020 Texas offense, I want to see what a Mike Yurcich offense looks like when he doesn't have Tom Herman leaning over his shoulder, trying to be being a little too heavy-handed offensively. So I do think, if I'm ranking the teams in that division, I would put Penn State ahead of Indiana. But, man, I thought Howard Griffin hit the nail on the head. When you see Tom Allen and kind of it is a lot of rah-rah, but, man, those players seem to really believe it. They seem to really rally around their head coach, and they've really bought into the message. And as long as that continues to be the case, I think they've got a little something there in Bloomington with this football program. So we'll talk a little bit more about Indiana coming up in the second hour when we hit, again, our Horn Top 20 countdown. We are at number 19 today, and it is the Indiana Hoosiers. Take a break, come back. Inconceivable is going to close out hour number one here on Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Shirts and skins.
Zoom technology probably helps you out in that regard a little bit too, huh? Keeping in touch with guys and things like that? The great Mike Leach.
A little bit. The Zoom is just so boring. I think Zoom's dreadful. I don't have much use for Zoom. I have to do a long Zoom.
And Snoop Daniel, Light the Tower.
Inconceivable. 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 Inconceivable.
What are you using that for? I don't think it means what you think it means.
Inconceivable means it's brought to you by our good friend Dr. Matthew J. Crawford, the fine folks at Austin Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. If you or your athlete have suffered an injury that requires orthopedic attention, visit austin-orthopedics.com and let Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and his team get you back in the game, not just on the field or on the court, but get you back feeling good in the game of life. That's Dr. Matthew J. Crawford, Austin Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, austin-orthopedics.com. Snoop, you're an iPhone user now, right? Still?
Yeah.
Do you still have it on your person?
I still have the same iPhone I originally bought.
Are you eating on the air right now?
I'm sorry.
What are you eating?
Cool Ranch Doritos for breakfast.
Breakfast of Champions. Okay.
And Cheez-It.
Is your iPhone on your person right now?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Well, I always have to check and make sure that you didn't leave it in a bar or at a gas station or somewhere else. Because I know at some point, I'm just prepared for it now. I'm going to get that email from Snoop that says, Jeff, Craig, I lost my phone. Please email me if you need anything. No, I ask because do you use that function that I use that allows you to block unknown callers?
I need to
voicemail.
Figure that out.
Yeah. I like that function. Well, apparently, I need to disable that function because an Australian woman who dodged multiple calls from what she suspected to be scammers was shocked when she finally answered the phone and learned she had won nearly a $1.5 million lottery jackpot. This woman is from Tasmania, said she had been avoiding this specific number's phone calls because she didn't recognize the number. Quote, I never answer calls from numbers I don't know because I always think they're nuisance people who are trying to do something naughty. But you called me so many times that I thought I'd answer it just to see what it was about. The woman said she had bought the ticket from the Festival Westbury Lotto outlet in Westbury. I guess that's in Tasmania. The woman said she had won about a $1.47 million jackpot in the July 31st lotto drawing. So, Snoop, maybe you answer some of those phone calls. Maybe it's not solicitors or somebody telling you you want a cruise. Maybe it's, hey, dummy, you bought a lotto ticket, you won. We're trying to get you your money. You play the lottery, Snoop?
No. Maybe I should though, because I'm not gambling anymore. And I need that. I need that. High.
How's Snoop of Wall Street done lately?
Basically, playing the Wall Street. Unless you're long, you're playing the long game is gambling. Like the people, I don't want to go too deep into it, but like the whole AMC thing where it hit 60 and it's down to like 34 now. It's all speculation and gambling.
See, that's like me getting back into the trading card hobby. I got a lot of people saying like, oh, you need to spend money and invest in this player and invest. I'm like, invest? To me, it's not. I mean,
it's not a hobby.
You guys can look at it at works of art. I'm just trying to collect some Ken Griffey Jr. and Emmitt Smith cards. That's all I'm trying to do. Speaking of collecting, Snoop, somebody collected a disease that I'm pretty sure I haven't heard about since playing Oregon Trail. You played Oregon Trail back in the day
on the old school computers?
The old DOS computer, yeah. Yes. Man, Bob gets cholera, and you're just all kinds of screwed, and you didn't get you a raft, and you've got to forge the river, and you lose your oxen, and all your...
Dang.
You lose some pelts, yeah.
Pellets! Oh, my God.
At some point, Oregon Trail is just going to do you dirty. At some point, something's going to go wrong, and you never make it to your final destination. At least I never did. But thankfully, this woman is okay. Snoop, a California woman contracted typhus after disposing of a dead rat, then she later learned that her neighbor contracted the virus at the same time. She said it was exhaustion, then a fever, then a headache. She said she couldn't do anything. She was just so exhausted. She thought she'd contract COVID-19, but her COVID test came back negative. She continued to feel ill for weeks and eventually went back to the doctor. This woman's name is Margaret Holzman. She said, quote, "He asked me the relevant question, which is, have you had any contact with wild animals? And I thought, no, not really. And then I thought, oh, wait, there was that rat." Holzman had cleaned up a dead rat in her backyard. That was a mistake, since infected fleas gave her typhus. She posted her story to the Nextdoor app and found that other neighbors had typhus too. Two blocks over, a neighbor says her grandfather got it around the same time this woman did. And also the same thing, disposing of a dead rat on their property. It's not clear how many people in the neighborhood were hit with the disease. The director of infectious disease with Dignity Health says typhus is commonly undiagnosed. Common symptoms include chills, fever, headache, rash, and muscle aches similar to those that accompany the flu. Typhus can be easily treated with antibiotics. However, there are cases of persistent symptoms and even some severe cases. A small portion of people can have liver or kidney failure and can have problems where it affects the brain. So, a disease that I thought had pretty much been eradicated with, and I Googled it, like apparently like the last known cases were in like Bosnia in like 1971 was the last time typhus was like a thing. But apparently in California, as if people living in California didn't need more reasons to leave the state and continue flocking to our fair burg, I guess avoiding typhus is the new reason to leave California and get somewhere else. And if you want to stop migrating to Austin,
there's another reason.
Clogging our roads, that would be nice.
For people leaving California.
What's the other reason?
This is my little inconceivable.
Oh, look at Snoop contributing to inconceivable again.
A California law taking effect January 1, 2022 could make pork harder to find. And bacon could completely disappear.
I heard about this, yeah.
From California.
So this is a deal where, to protect animals, you have to give them more space to roam. But hog farmers are finding that they don't have space to give. Therefore, you've got to have just fewer hogs. Fewer hogs to process means less bacon for everybody. So California, you've got everything's expensive, and you've got typhus and no bacon, and man, it's just, I guess this is not a good time if you're trying to move to California or why people should stay in California. We don't have bacon, and you can get diseases that were popular on the Oregon Trail, so have at it. California, come get typhus. I wouldn't exactly put that on the Chamber of Commerce brochure. All right. That does it for hour number one. We'll take a break. Hour number two, Light the Tower, coming up next on The Horn, live, local, and digital on The Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Hey, right now is an absolutely outstanding time to buy a new or used car, truck, or sport utility vehicle from my